Hello, and welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm David Rogowski, and today I will be reading from Outside Magazine. All right, our first article is entitled, Sedona's Enchantment Resort is a powerful nexus of nature and vortex energy. I was in need of transformation, but wasn't so sure chakra balancing treatments and hikes through a mystical vortex site would help. And this is by Tasha Zemke. Why I love the Enchantment Resort. Sedona, Arizona is best known for two things, the stunning red rock landscape, which draws thousands each year for hiking and mountain biking, and its vortex energy, a contested phenomenon that has drawn plenty of curious people and turned this high desert city into metaphysical Mecca. The Enchantment Resort is a nexus of both. From its location at the base of Boynton Canyon, the 70-acre luxury property is surrounded by high sandstone cliffs that make you and your problems feel minuscule. And that's a good thing. The canyon has long been considered sacred by Native people, and more recently by holy by pilgrims and unique by New Age mystics and psychics who believe in its spiritual powers. Today, Enchantment Resorts tend to draw guests seeking change in their lives, managing director Stan Kantowski told me, or those hoping for peace and resolution in the wake of some tough change. It's an emotional place, he said. The mystery of just how transformative an experience this could be intrigued me. The regenerative powers of nature are proven, but would I feel different hiking in a high-energy vortex zone, said to induce physical effects like tingling or hair-raising? Would I return home convinced in the merits of carrying crystals in my pockets, newly grounded by hours spent among heavy red rocks that have loomed large here since before the dinosaurs? And would the Mi Amano Spa's long list of alternative and expensive treatments, from sound baths and chakra balancing to manifesting new moon ceremonies and Reiki release the bad and let in the good? I wanted to be convinced, to be cared for. My personal life had been taking a nosedive, and I longed for something magical to happen. So I called one of my best friends to meet me for a short stay, and we headed there with open minds. What exactly is a vortex, and why is Sedona known for them? A vortex is a spot where some people believe an intense energy is emitted, called an electric vortex, or pulled back into Earth, a magnetic vortex. It's believed to occur at the intersection of ley lines or electromagnetic threads of energy that crisscross the planet. Boynton Canyon is considered to be one of four major vortices within an 11-mile radius in Sedona. It's energy-electromagnetic, a combo vortex of sorts. Where there's talk of heightened energy, there's talk of spiritual awakening. Exactly what that means and how the area's vortex energy will work for you, or whether it will at all, depends on the person and their intentions. In short, Sedona is a place to feel alive, said Karina Leveriza, who has moved here 13 years ago after her husband died. She hiked every day for months as a way to heal. Now she leads vortex treks at the Enchantment Resort. Whatever you bring to the vortex will be amplified, she said when I asked her what I might expect after a hike up the canyon. If you're happy, you'll be effervescent. If you're grumpy, you'll be grumpier. Vortices are also thought to be portals to other dimensions, and especially so in Boynton Canyon. In her book, Earth Frequency, Melissa Alvarez writes that the veil to other dimensions is believed to be thinner in Sedona than it is at other vortex sites, which in the United States includes Mount Shasta in California, Sugarloaf Mountain in Utah, and Niuwa Island in Hawaii. The Sedona Canyons are believed, she writes, to enhance spiritual growth and intrinsic connection to universal knowledge. Adventure Intel. Enchantment Resort offers some access to 400 miles of trails for hiking and mountain biking with equipment available from on-site trail house, and staff can arrange guided tours to suit your interest and skill level. My friend Danielle Gill and I set off on the easy 2.6-mile Boynton Canyon Trail one afternoon with Leveriza, who was a fount of good energy, eager to tell us personal stories and lore, receptive to our infinite inquiries, and generally ambling along in an upbeat way. The beautiful sandy path led past pines and succulents, and Leveriza stopped occasionally to point out some of the more than 180 ancient cave dwellings on the Box Canyon walls. Quartz crystals, said to be a source of clarifying energy, flecking the red rocks and twisted tree trunks and branches that she told us were evidence of the canyon's spiraling vortex effects. Hike with intention, she said, then asked us to stay silent for a few minutes to consider what was deep in our hearts. Psychics have said that what pierces the portals here are intentions. I vowed to have more resolve, to be more joyful, to devote more time for myself, and to make hard decisions rooted in kindness and fairness. In the quiet of the canyon, it all seemed possible. As we arrived back at the resort, a group of women were meditating on the lawn. Javelinas munched the grass, and two deer hoofed slowly up a hillside towards a casita. Leveriza directed us to an incredible vista overlooking the property and the rock massifs that made the greater Sedona panorama so magnificent. She lit a sage smudge stick, waved it slowly around our heads, and recited a meditation, the smoke lingering in the air as if were a spirit listening in too. Hiking was a highlight for me, but Enchantment has several other recreational options, including swimming in four pools, stargazing. Sedona is an international dark sky community, and in winter, a ice rink for outdoor skating. There are tennis and pickleball courts, yoga, Pilates, Qigong classes, chanting sessions, and educational sessions on nutrition and juicing. Curated private high-end offerings around northern Arizona are also enticing if your budget allows, and include heli tours to the Grand Canyon, sommelier led wine tours at Page Springs, a growing viticulture destination, and climbing excursions in Prescott. At the resort, the deeper dive into self tends to happen at Miamal Spa, which reopened in 2023 after a multi-million-dollar renovation. Considered one of the best spas in the nation, it's open only to Enchantment guests. Treatments aren't cheap. The least expensive is $250 for 60 minutes. But there are many more. More than 50, they head into metaphysical terrain not normally an offer at resort spa. I wanted to sign up for the hour-long sound bath to reduce stress, meditate deep by walking a labyrinth, get a numerology or tarot or pendulum reading, undergo hypnosis to delve into past life regression, and treat my doshas with a balancing wrap. When would I ever see a menu like this again? Instead, I opted to have my chakras, which I knew nothing about, balance. The therapist who led me through this treatment was empathetic, her voice soothing, her touch gentle. I lay prone on the massage table and she rocked my body back and forth. I started heaving huge quiet sobs. She continued as if my crying was the most natural thing in the world. Tell me that my heart chakra must have been blocked. I flipped over, she massaged my muscles using different scented oil for the seven chakras, focal energy points in the body, and then placed polished gemstones atop each to amplify those energies. I was tired. Padded to the lower floor of the spa, my slippers and robe to the dry and wet saunas and hot tub, and rotated between them all for another half an hour. That evening, I popped into the Crystal Grotto, a dark circular room with crystals the size of cats, demarcating the four compass points. Before entering, you're invited to write down something you'd like to let go of, with a promise that the sheets of paper would be burned, releasing those troubles to the universe. Then you remove your shoes so you can feel the bare ground beneath your feet. I wrote a note and deposited it into the little box of burdens. I curled my toes into the soft sand, and as the grotto guide took up a singing bowl in the low light, I closed my eyes and zoned in on the humming sounds, which research has shown to reduce stress and improve your mood. Good vibrations. Choice rooms. The resort has 38 adobe-style casitas housing a total of 218 guest rooms, each with its own patio and views of the massive canyon walls. My room 180 was spacious, with a living room area adjacent to a queen bed, and a large bathroom with a deep bathtub. It was a 5-minute uphill walk to the main reception area and restaurants, but guests anywhere can call for golf cart service. I asked the bellhop and her hiking guide which rooms were considered the best. Both like casita buildings 37 and 38, situated higher on the grounds and deeper within the canyon than the rest. They face the eastern walls of the canyon, which glow in hues of orange, red, and russet as the sun sets. Eat and drink. All the resort's three restaurants, the Whole Foods-focused menus, and relaxed ambiance come served with vast views. The hardest restaurant to book is Che Achi, more of a fine dining experience, but the one I like the best is its newest, Hummingbird, located with Mi Amo. I enjoyed a leisurely breakfast there one morning while gazing up at hawks drifting in the thermals near the canyon tops. The clouds looked like they had been painted by Georgia O'Keeffe. Offsite, I was wowed by local juicery, a vibrant, popular local place just 13 miles from the resort. On offer are 20 kinds of smoothies, superfood coffees, tonics, juice blends, and a grab-and-go selection of healthy treats that you can take to the trail. This being Sedona, you can also pick up herbal supplements targeted towards better focus, energy, mood, and sex drive. Flying for cheap eats, I asked locals for their recommendations. They like Oak Creek Brewing Company, Eriberto's, Layla's Bakery, and Tamaliza Cafe for fresh tamales made daily. And when to go. Spring and fall, when the weather tends to be the most pleasant in northern Arizona, are the busiest months at Enchantment Resort. March sees the most rain. The hottest month in July in Sedona is July, with an average temperature of 97 degrees. Though the summer monsoons, which usually begin in June and can last as late as August, bring cooling afternoon rains. December and January are the coldest months, with an average high of 57 degrees. While it only snows in Sedona a handful of times each year, staff tell me that Boynton Canyon covered in snow is a sight to behold. Guests in December can also look forward to live music every night. How to get there? Most out-of-state visitors fly into Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport, rent a car, and motor the 126 miles north via Highway 260. I road-tripped in from New Mexico and swung down from Flagstaff, a spectacular drive south on State Route 89A through Oak Creek Canyon, where the fall foliage was a brilliant yellow in September, and past Slide Rock State Park. It's slow going because everyone is rubbernecking at the scenery, but I thought of it as an easy introduction to and grand finale of my wellness journey at the resort. Don't miss, crystal shops are everywhere in Sedona. Give in to your curiosity and check them out. It's part of the woohoo experience here, especially for first-time visitors. Danielle and I spent an hour at Mystical Bazaar after our spa treatments at the resort. We picked out gemstone bracelets for friends and mementos for ourselves. We had our aura photos taken. I was happy to read that mine was reportedly now strong and radiant. No doubt thanks to my balancing session at Enchantment, and that my predominant color, green, reflected growth and joy. We weren't able to book an immediate consultation with a medium or a psychic. The time slots for the remainder of the afternoon were all taken. Maybe next visit. After a few days at Enchantment Resort, I'd eaten well and exercised, I soaked up the Vortex 5 in a beautiful canyon, and I pondered spiritual growth in a new way. I felt lighter about life. Maybe it was simply the effects of finally being on vacation after a lot of weary work weeks. But 2 months later, I still feel changed by the experience. I believed, and that's a big part of any trip here, there's generally something to it. And so that was a little thing on a resort hotel in Sedona in the Vortexes. Okay, up next, the beginner's guide to rucking. Whether you're hiking over rough terrain or going for a walk around the block, rucking is an easy way to add in resistance training. It's by Alyssa Ages. When it comes to fitness trends, few have as low a barrier to enter as rucking. The popular exercise, which has millions of posts using hashtag rucking on TikTok and Instagram, requires only that you have a backpack, some things to stash in it, and a place to walk. In fact, if you ever gone on a backpacking trip, taken the long way home from the store with your groceries on your back, or slung your child's book bag over your shoulders while walking them to and from school, you've already rucked. Like many fitness movements, boot camp classes, CrossFit, this one has its origins in the military. Army recruits embark on long marches with heavy rucksacks as part of their training regimen. For the rest of us, weighted walking is a low-impact way to build strength and endurance, explains Sean Blinch, a Toronto-based CrossFit coach and gym owner who has been rucking for 5 years. Both beginner-friendly and scalable for advanced athletes, the combination of cardio and resistance training will primarily work your legs, core, and back. It's also something you can do with limited time. We can find so many reasons not to move, Blinch says. Everyone's time poor. Nobody has enough time for anything. With rucking, you don't have to warm up or cool down. Just put on the backpack and go out, he adds. Many people suffer from posture-related issues too, especially individuals who spend a lot of time sitting at a desk. Rucking may help to correct some of those concerns. The weighted pack can help pull your shoulders back, mitigating some of the effects of upper cross syndrome, a condition characterized by tightness and weakness in the muscles of the neck, upper back, and shoulders, Blinch says. Being sedentary takes a toll on our lower body as well. When we are seated for long periods of time, our body begins to adapt to that positioning, tightening the hip flexors. That can weaken the hips over time, making exercise and daily movements uncomfortable or painful. And this can get worse as we age. When you walk, however, you have your hip in a very natural, open position, Blinch says. What you need to ruck. Picking up rucking is as easy as lacing up a pair of shoes, putting on a weighted backpack, and heading out the door. Brands like Go Ruck sell special packs just for rucking, but any day pack with durable padded straps will also work. To add weight, you can use household items like dumbbells, canned goods, and books. Wrap your items in a towel to avoid any hard edges digging into your back as you walk. A weight plate will distribute the load more evenly across your back. Weighted vests, which distribute weight equally around your torso, are also an option. As outside columnist Alex Hutchinson has written, it's easier to maintain a normal posture and gait with a vest than a backpack, since you don't need to lean forward to resist the weight behind you. You also likely burn less energy, that is to say calories, with a vest. Whether you choose a vest or a backpack, make sure that your footwear gives you enough support and stability. Blinch recommends lacing up a pair of shoes that you would use for distance running. Finally, while rucking on a trail can offer an added challenge to your stability and core strength, as well as emotional benefits of being in nature, you can ruck on city or suburban streets too. It's less about getting it right and more about getting time outdoors, on your feet, away from a screen or desk. Ideally, you'll enjoy it too. Rucking should fit into your life. In the I get to do this area, Blinch says, choosing a weight. For your first time, Blinch recommends going easy. In terms of weight, that might look like loading either 5 or 10% of your body weight into a pack. For a 160-pound person, that would be between 8 and 16 pounds. If you're already active and experienced with both strength and cardio, you can start with 15 to 25% of your body weight, between 25 and 40 pounds, for that 160-pound athlete. And choosing a distance, beginners or less active individuals should start with 1 mile or about 15 to 20 minutes of walking if you're going by time rather than distance. Active individuals can start with about 30 minutes. Blinch recommends adding distance to your rucks before increasing weight. When in doubt, determine your distance or weight by your rate of perceived exertion. In general, aim for a pace that's somewhere between a stroll and a brisk walk. If it feels punishing, you're either going too far or too heavy, Blinch says. It should almost always feel like this is leaning on the side of easy. And how often should you ruck? You can fit rucks into your existing schedule in a way that feels natural and low pressure. Blinch suggests 2 or 3 rucks a week, but notes that they can also be part of your daily routine rather than a separate workout you need to carve out time to accomplish. You can turn a series of errands into a ruck by bringing an empty pack, loading your purchases into it, and walking back home. And how heavy is too heavy? If you don't have a rucking race or event in mind, determining when to max out can be confusing. One popular rule of thumb is to stick to a weight that allows you to cover a mile in under 20 minutes. Army standard is 15 minutes. If it's taking you longer than that, consider dropping weight. Another general suggestion is to stick to loads that do not exceed one-third of your body weight. And keep it casual. Though it can be tempting to go as hard and as far as possible, Blinch recommends increasing demand on your body slowly, bumping up your weight or distance by about 10% each week. With rucking, less is more, Blinch says, so you should be thinking about taking the intensity out. The benefits really come without all the intense stuff added on to it. And try these rucking workouts. To add variety to your rucks, here are two workouts Blinch recommends. Strength and interval training. Warm up 5 to 10 minutes of walking with no weight to get the blood flowing. And the workout is walk for 5 minutes with a weighted pack. Stop and perform 10 lunges or squats with the pack on your back. Repeat for 4 rounds. In your cool down, a few minutes of walking without weight, followed by some light stretching that focuses on your calves, hamstrings, and lower back. A hill workout. Warm up with a brisk 5-minute walk, no weight, and do a few dynamic stretches. And the workout would be to ruck for a total of 20 to 30 minutes, choosing a route with hills. An uphill section, shorten your stride length, and maintain a slightly forward-leaning posture for balance. Alternate between a faster pace for 2 minutes and a slower, steady pace for 1 minute. And for the cool down, end with 5 minutes of walking without the pack and stretch out your calves, quads, and hip. And so that was the introduction to rucking. And next up, we have Leadville. America's highest city is a boom and bust town or reborn. This remote mountain town has its ups and downs. In recent years, famous races put it on the map, but some knew of it as year-round treasures all along. This is by James Jasinski. Most of Colorado's 1800s boom towns lived fast and died young. Leadville is an exception, evolving from being one of the world's wildest Wild West outposts to the heart of Colorado's high-altitude outdoor adventures. Colorado's two highest mountains, the 14,440-foot Mount Elbert and 14,429-foot Mount Massive, dominate the horizon west of Leadville. For good measure, the state's third highest mountain, Mount Harvard, at 14,423-foot, is about an hour's drive from town. The trio represents the three highest peaks in the whole of the Rocky Mountains. Aside from its situation amidst such resources, the town of Leadville, since 1983 and 1994, has hosted major 100-mile running and mountain bike races, respectively. And what keeps Leadville relevant and thriving today is outdoor recreation. Leadville materialized in 1860 with the discovery of placer gold, which is gold extracted from eroded rock, and the mining boom was on. Gold and zinc deposits eventually took a back seat to Leadville's dominant metal, silver. There are rumors of misdirection behind the misleading name, but the lead in Leadville wasn't entirely disingenuous. Lead ore was indeed mined in the area, but it was a silver-bearing lead ore blend called cerussite that gave the town its official title. Leadville was bestowed by Horace DeBoer, a developer known variously as the Bonanza King and the Silver King. In 1878, after trying out such names as California Gulch, Boughton, Slabtown, and my favorite, Cloud City. In 1880, Leadville reached a peak population of 14,820, recorded in the city's official census. An explosion of wealth brought along with it a desire for refined culture in a rough place. Horace DeBoer fast-tracked the DeBoer Opera House in 1879, opening the same year as the elegant Interlaken Hotel on the shores of Twin Lakes, a gorgeous but ultimately doomed retreat for well-off visitors. The luxury starkly contrasts with the abysmal conditions in the perilous, unsafe mines. An estimated 3,000 to 5,000 miners died from 1860 to 1899 in cave-ins, explosions, and equipment accidents. A lack of safety standards and reports on mine accidents makes it difficult to pinpoint the number of fatalities. The Panic of 1893 and President Grover Cleveland's initiative to repeal the Sherman Silver Purchase Act, however, jointly tanked Leadville's fortunes. The Sherman Silver Act had required the government to purchase a monthly allotment of 4.5 million ounces, roughly 280,000 pounds of silver. Its revocation was the beginning of the end for Leadville's mining prosperity, but not for the city itself. Leadville is America's highest incorporated city. At 10,152 feet, it is a mere 408 feet away from being twice as high as Denver at 5,280 feet. The city's history is rich and well worth exploring. Strategic visitors can benefit from a day or two in and below town while acclimating to the thin air. Moving up gradually is a solid plan for both local Coloradans and out-of-state guests who aspire to hike the high peaks. Mountain hiking in the Leadville region is world-class. 7 peaks over 14,000 feet lie within an hour's drive of Leadville, and all of them can be hiked on established trails without the use of ropes or technical climbing equipment. The two highest Colorado peaks, Elbert and Massive, have trailheads less than half a mile apart. A dozen excellent 13,000-foot peaks explore the nearby backcountry, Ski Cooper, 11 miles from Leadville, may be moderate in terrain, but captures a family-friendly, authentic aesthetic lacking in Colorado's mega resort ski towns. The repurposed backcountry cabins of Colorado's 10th Mountain Division huts are open to visitors year-round, though winter reservations can be challenging to secure. And because people are crazy, Leadville hosts two 100-mile races, the Leadville Trail 100 Mountain Bike for bikers and the Leadville Trail 100 Run. I've hiked Mount Elbert 12 times at the time of writing this and might have added that to that count by the time you're reading this. Mount Elbert and neighboring Mount Massive have established hiking trails requiring good fitness and altitude acclimation. Still, with proper acclimatization and preparation, they are attainable by everyman hikers who want to stand on the highest ground in Colorado. I could write a book about the excellent hiking around Leadville. The 14,197-foot Mount Sherman is a great first fortuner, and one route starts from Iowa Gulch on the Leadville side of the mountain. The Mosquito Pass area has some of my favorite 13ers, including Treasure Vault Mountain, Mosquito Peak, and London Mountain. These peaks don't see the crowds of 14ers do, but offer all the same great views and rolling, rounded ridgelines. French Mountain and Oklahoma Mountain are two more remote 13ers I also count among my favorites, offering wilderness solitude with the historical flashes of mining ruins. Oklahoma Mountain was the site of a plane crash in 1954, and some of the wreckage can still be seen on the mountain. And for over 20 years, my visits to Leadville were almost exclusively to climb and hike in the mountains. On a recent trip, I decided to shift my focus and dive into the city's brief but ample history. Rather than sleeping in one of my battered tents, I took a more civilized approach and rented an Airbnb right in town. Leadville's compact layout makes most interesting sites a short walk or bike ride away. The original inhabitants of the region were indigenous Ute and Arapaho tribes. Both have oral histories of the area going back hundreds of years. This history is told in detail at the Ute Indian Museum in Montrose, Colorado, about a three-hour drive away. Most of Leadville's historical displays focus on the mining era from 1860 onward. I started at the National Mining Hall of Fame and Museum in Matchless Mine. Exhibits showcase an unflinching look at the dangerous art of extracting minerals from the earth. My next stop was to a place highlighting the human toll of immigration to a cold and remote place. The Leadville Irish Miners Memorial and Evergreen Cemetery, completed in 2023, honors over 1,300 Irishmen, women, and children who sought something better in America and are buried in unmarked graves. As Irish Network Colorado eloquently states, the Irish occupied the bottom rung of the Leadville social ladder, worked the mines and smelters, loved, struggled, dreamed, and died young. Evergreen Cemetery is set in a peaceful shady of stately ponderosa pines, a mosaic of pine needles and native grasses underfoot. The tasteful memorial features a short labyrinth walkway that ends at the sculpture of a miner holding a pickaxe and a harp, one of Ireland's national symbols. Leadville's mining community was well represented by two major groups, including Jewish as well as Irish immigrants. Jewish pioneers' history here have been preserved at Leadville's Temple Israel, built in 1884 for a community that then numbered some 400 and contributed to business and municipal life. The top echelons of Leadville society were those on the winning side of the mining equation. One was August R. Meyer, a mining engineer who built the ornate 9-bedroom Healy House atop a small hill above the city proper. You need to make a reservation to tour the grounds in winter. That's $10 for adults, free for ages 18 and under. While in summer, the place is open Wednesdays through Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., with walk-in tours. It's worth looking inside to see what top-of-the-line comfort looked like in 1878. Surrounding Leadville is a 11.6-mile circle is a paved mineral belt trail, accessible to runners, cyclists, and dogs, and wheelchair-friendly. In winter, the trail is a popular cross-country ski destination. The pathway weaves through mining ruins on the south side of town with informational signs at relevant sites. One is the dusty mine where the Guggenheim family made their fortune prior to founding the sophisticated Guggenheim Museum in New York City. I wish I had a lot more time to explore the whole trail, but I had a year-old border collie that was itching to explore some of Leadville's aquatic sites, its brilliant alpine lakes. Turquoise Lake is a perfect place for a peaceful lunch break. In the summer, the lake is a popular destination for boating, camping, and fishing. Come autumn, when I visit, it's a much quieter scene. On this day, it was a detour en route to hike to the restored site of the Interlochen Resort at Twin Lakes. Most of my hiking adventures in Leadville are in the high peaks, so it was nice to change of pace to explore a new trail, one that leads to a haunted hotel from the 1800s. At least, I assume it's haunted. The trail to the resort site is almost a mostly flat shelf that borders the southern shore of Twin Lakes, 22 miles from town. About 5 miles round trip, with a total elevation gain of about 335 feet, the outing would be great for a family. You can even mountain bike the trail if you're in a hurry to see the hotel. While the main hotel is closed, the long-ago millionaire owner James V. Dexter's private cabin, built in 1895, is open to the public. Dexter bought the resort in 1883 and supported it as a luxury draw for 13 years until Twin Lakes were dammed, a mere year after the cabin's construction. The shoreline became shallow and stagnant, and fears of malaria and other diseases were the death knell of the once popular resort. It was abandoned in the early 1900s. I could easily see the appeal of such a stunning location, especially in early October when shimmering waves of hyper-yellow aspen leaves contrast with the inky waters of Twin Lakes, set in a valley below Colorado's tallest mountains. The buildings are surprisingly well-preserved. The place looks as if it could open for business next spring. I didn't forget about our pal Horace Tabor. When Tabor was briefly at the top of the world, he built the Tabor Opera House, which is still in operation with guided and private tours and events. Tabor, a business person and industry titan who came here from Vermont, went from rags to riches and then back to rags, dying of appendicitis in 1899 in Denver, where he worked as a postmaster. His wife and widow, Baby Doe Tabor, was equally famous, having lured Horace Tabor away from his first wife with her reportedly unmatched beauty. Baby Doe's story ended 35 years later when she froze to death, alone and destitute, in a cabin near the Matchless Mine in her early 80s. The list of famous people who visited Leadville reads like a who's who from the 1800s. Mark Twain, Doc Holliday, the unsinkable Molly Brown, who survived the Titanic disaster of 1912. Buffalo Bill, Bat Masterson, a Wild West lawman, Ulysses S. Grant, and Susan B. Anthony all set foot in the city. Leadville still finally remembers its visits from Oscar Wilde in 1882. In a lecture at the Tabor Opera House, Wilde remarked upon a sign he allegedly saw in the Leadville Saloon. "Don't shoot the piano player. He is doing his best." For a small place like Leadville, has a good selection of dining options. I like to pair a visit to my friendly pizza place, High Mountain Pies, featuring a dog-friendly yard. We'll stop next door at the Kitschy House with Eye Museum, a humble museum showcasing the furnishings of homes from 1880s to 1930s. The Golden Burrow Cafe and the Lounge and Silver Dollar Saloon are solid American dining options in historic old-timey settings. The food is good, and don't worry, both establishments are family-friendly. Historians place April 26, 1860, the day Abe Lieb discovered Placer Gold, a mile from town in the surrounding California Gulch, as the day that started the Colorado Gold Rush and gave rise to the human drama that would unfold, tangled in ambition, greed, luck, and misfortune. Leadville's 2020 census showed a population of 2,633, far smaller than the boomtown days when the town was second in size only to Denver. Leadville today may have fewer people, but the spirit of the place is far from diminished. Pivoting to outdoor recreation has created a new kind of boom that balances the region's natural beauty with the authentic grittiness that put Leadville on the map. The city has settled into a good place, training its pickaxes for hiking poles. Leadville's sharp edges have been smoothed down like the towering mountains surrounding it. Summer days in the high mountains cede to relaxing evenings on the casual confines of Main Street. Take your dogs for stand-up paddleboarding on Turquoise Lake or run on a mineral belt trail. As I discovered on my most recent visit, Leadville always has more to uncover. So that was an article on Leadville by author James Dysinski. You have been listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I've been reading from Outside Magazine. My name is Dave Rogowski. Thank you for listening.